Tell me about Bella and Celeste.
Oh, Bella was just like Chris. Just like him, shy, cautious, conservative. Cece was a ball of fire. I mean, she was fearless, completely fearless. She just loved to run. So they were wonderful. It breaks my heart to know that they're not here. They were beautiful children, beautiful children. And he was in basketball, he was in baseball, he was in football, and loved NASCAR. He and his dad went to the NASCAR races all the time. Loved sports. And he was a good kid. Had two best friends, and that's who he grew up with and still are friends with them today. And there's nothing that would have predicted any of this could have ever happened.
Yeah.
Nothing in his childhood at all. I would have never in a million years thought something like this could happen to him at all.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profiles. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, and author of the Domestic Abuse and Stalking and Harassment Honor-Based Violence Risk Model and the book Policing Domestic Violence.
And I'm Lisa Zambetti. I'm the casting director for CBS's Criminal Minds. We're continuing this just... gut-ripping discussion of the murders of Shannon, Cece, Bella, and Nico Watts by husband and father Chris Watts. Jim and Laura, a lot of us, the listeners and myself included, we're trying to track the breadcrumbs. We're trying to look back in time in the life of this family and see where this evil came from. And I just don't think it's as simple as that. And I know you'll talk me through this, but I must have looked at hundreds of videos from this family, you know, going back all the way to the birth of the girls, thousands of pictures. I've combed through the police report and the discovery, which is almost 2,000 pages. And I just can't believe that a year before Chris Watts's affair with Nicole Kessinger, that he would have ever dreamed in a million years that he would do this to his family. I'm never going to excuse his behavior. He's evil incarnate. But when I look at him with his children, not just the smiley portrait pictures, but just him playing with them, I see a father who loves his kids, who's completely comfortable with them, who has them on his hip for hours at a time, and who really loved his wife when he married her and through their marriage. Am I just naive and missing it? Or is he an aberration or what? This isn't like OJ, how you could imagine that Nicole, it was only a matter of time before he killed her, or you know what I mean?
Right.
So the first thing is, Lisa, that particularly with family wipeouts or family annihilators, most people would say they didn't see it coming. One of the cases that sticks in my mind, and I went to interview a grandmother and grandfather whose daughter and grandchildren had been brutally murdered, the Austin family, and it was Claire Austin and Jade and Kieran with the two children. I'll never forget the case. And I knock on the door and the grandmother, Carol, said to me, "Oh, my goodness, Laura, I'm so glad you're here. This just came completely out the blue. There were just no warning signs." And I did wonder whether this was a 1% of case, because they do exist. They are, I'm sure, out there. I've never discovered them. I've never found them. But I did wonder if this was one of them. And she led me through to the lounge, and I sat down with her, and I stayed there for 3 hours interviewing her. And then I found in her narrative, there were many warning signs. And I watched videos, and I saw Philip Austin playing with the children. But But there were some images where he dangled the child, the baby boy, upside down by his feet in play, and the child was clearly distressed. There were some things at the wedding, for example, when Philip Austin turned up, no one on his side, no family, no friends. And one of the most telling things to me was when the grandmother told me that, oh, there was one time when Jade and Kieran were kicking the breakfast bar, and I said, don't do that, Daddy will be home in a minute. And she said, Jade looked at me and took an intake of breath, said, don't tell Daddy. When Daddy's angry, he puts his hands around my neck, Nanny, and I can't breathe.
Mm.
And she said to me, well, we put him into anger management, Laura. And I said, well, it wasn't anger management that he needed. Did he attend any of the courses? He attended one. And then I heard he had punched a wall out and that he was spending all the money on him. And Claire had lost a lot of weight. She'd gone to try and get a divorce. She'd spoken to her neighbour that he was calling her fat. And so you start to unpick and unravel what's really going on behind closed doors, because oftentimes people say, he was a perfect father, Laura. He took the kids to the sweet shop every Sunday. And so you hear these things a lot. But yet when you ask a different set of questions, and I think this is a case where a lot of people still don't really understand the dynamics of what was going on. But when you look to when the relationship first started, there was an imbalance. There was, as we now know, she had lupus and she didn't think she would meet someone. And the relationship starts with her being vulnerable and dependent upon him. And it's a whirlwind. So we have to go all the way back to the start. How did they meet? And so we start to understand that she felt a power imbalance with him. He was her savior. He went to the colonoscopy. He was going to all her meetings very early on in the relationship. A month, 2 months in, that accelerates a relationship. And the dynamic was such that we heard from her, Shanann herself, who said when she was pregnant with the first two babies, she was at home all the time. She was at home doing all homely things. What we're now seeing on Facebook when we see her is the exact opposite. Her saying that she's going out, that she has never had so much energy. She is, and I'm going to say it, thriving. That was the company that she had to thrive. And he was using those products and he was doing the burn as well. And I looked at all of that, the lifestyle stuff. And so the dynamics had shifted anyway in, you know, the course of their 8-year relationship. But there was dependency. And then we're seeing everything has flipped on its head because of bankruptcy. And it was he who got them into that state, from what I've understood with the bankruptcy. There were medical bills to pay, but he was the breadwinner. And I'm using that term breadwinner. Initially, he was the one, because when she was pregnant, she wasn't going out working all the way through the pregnancies. I heard her say, her own testimony, that she stayed at home most of the time. So relationship dynamics shift and they do change. And there was a very clear set of behavioral changes from him, from her. And a lot of people don't really think that that is relevant.
Yeah.
But it
and
is.
I agree. And I think, Lisa, when you ask, where does this evil come from? I think rather than something adding in, I think it's a lack of something. I don't think he had the requisite amount of human empathy. And I think it's that lack that finally showed itself. He may have appeared to be a great father and a loving, doting father and husband. But was that real, or was that him mimicking what he thought he was supposed to do? I don't know. But I also want to say that all people are multidimensional. There is no 100% perfect good person, nor is there one 100% perfectly bad person. And like I always try to avoid the term evil, even though I believe what Chris did was evil. I don't believe he was evil. I believe he was a human being who made choices, very selfish, incredibly narcissistic choices that only served him. And in order to get over, I mean, let's think about this. What kind of wall do you have to scale, you know, to get over in order to cold-bloodedly kill your two toddler children and your unborn child and your wife? It's a hell of a high wall. And for most human beings, an impossibility. but not for him. So what does that reveal? That wall probably wasn't anywhere near as high for him. And that wall would normally be love and empathy. So I believe that means, that tells us in very stark terms, that his capacity for empathy was much lower than anybody had any idea of. He was capable of pretending very well. He was capable of acting very well. But I don't believe he had it, because if he had it, I don't believe he would have been able to overcome it.
You liken this at all, Laura and Jim, to somebody who has like a drug addiction, that an obsession can come over you for a person and all that dopamine is firing off, that you could have been a perfectly happy, non-addicted person, but once you get that hit of crack, once you get that hit of heroin, you are instantly a different person. I know I'm being naive, but...
Well, there is neuroscience, and there are books written about crazy love, right? In inverted commas. So you're right. In one sense, the neuroscience of falling in love, there are chemical releases, dopamine, endorphin, serotonin, oxytocin, pheromones, all that good stuff. But that makes you love more. That doesn't make you want to harm.
Right.
So the opposite normally happens. But I do think, you know, what Jim was saying about the lack of empathy, I do believe there is a lack of empathy with Chris Watts. We do know, even with Nikki, he was Googling, when do you say I love you, and how do you know when someone's in love, and how do you respond to someone who says I love you? Mm-hmm. Which I think is very interesting.
That you have to look that up.
Exactly.
I mean, the core of the feeling drives those actions generally. But like we've said with other people that we've seen, and in this case, he describes bawling his eyes out. I was bawling my eyes out. He didn't talk about the emotions. I was so sad. I was so devastated that she wanted to leave. No, he said, I was doing something physical, which is crying, the physical act of crying, not the emotional response to this supposed encounter that they had. So I do believe that there are plenty of indications that this person, not evil entity, but this human being, made decisions based on what he thought was best for him. And so what does that mean? Well, I think we should look at him according to the psychopathy checklist and see exactly what that means.
Must be bewildering.
It's bewildering to me. It is. It is absolutely. How does this happen? How did this happen? And I go back in my mind thinking, was there something I didn't pick up with on Chris? But I can't think of anything except he was quiet.
It sounds like in your own mind, you're unsure as to what happened.
Yes.
Have you reconciled the idea that he could have done all of this?
Yes. And that scares me to death. It scares me to death to think that he could have done all of this. And I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there right now. But I don't see why he's pleading guilty. I wouldn't. I'd fight. I'd fight to the end. But then you ask yourself, would a normal person dispose of the bodies the way you did? And I would have called 911 if it happened like that.
Before we go into the psychopathy checklist, what Lisa said about, you know, watching videos and so on and so forth. Because I sat there going through Shanann's Facebook page, and of course there's lots of videos on there. We've seen some of it archived, but I think it is important to say that rarely do people put their darkest moments on social media. I think we all are guilty of putting this image out of ourselves, of living our best lives and so on. And when we're feeling terrible about things, not everybody honestly shares that. So what we're seeing is life through a lens that she wanted us to see. And I actually found the video the baby being announced, I cringed watching Chris Watts's his response to it. And he was clearly uncomfortable. Introverts are uncomfortable. So I do want to just say, you know, I do see introversion. I do see awkward, nerdy, a nerdy individual. Okay, nothing against nerds. I love nerds and geeks. I'm geeky myself. Jim's a geek. Lisa's a geek in her own way.
You guys know that.
we're all slightly geeky and nerdy in our own way.
Some of us more than slightly.
Loving chemicals and things like that, Mr. Clementi. So there's nothing against that. It's just the fact that there was behavioral change of him going from this person who was nerdy, introvert, geeky, to suddenly having the attention on him. In that video, he doesn't say he's pleased about the baby. He actually diverts in every way. He just says he likes the t-shirt. That's not the response you want, whether on camera or not. He clearly wasn't thrilled about it. And then he just talked about the pink stripe on the test, which you can hear her annoyance. That's not the point of focus. The focus should be that we're pregnant, and he's picking all the things around it rather than the thing itself. So it's clear he is not happy in those moments. But the point I wanted to say was this kind of lack of empathy, this lack of sincere or authentic reaction. I think that that may well be across his whole life course. And he's had people meeting his needs. And so one of the things that I found out was that Shanann did meet his needs in every way. She was the one before going to North Carolina. She was going out buying him food, doing his meal prep, cleaning the house before she went, packing her clothes, the girls' clothes. And she posted on Facebook for his bachelor life. Now, I suspect she had an inkling of things. Women normally know, and I always say, trust your own instinct because you're normally right. She knew that things were very off before she went to North Carolina. And we know that they had a relatively tactile relationship before then and that he was into her. But I felt that he was a narcissistic individual, that things had to revolve around him, even though he was the quiet type, even though he wasn't overtly the big I am. But his narcissism to me and his entitlement was clear. And so I don't like those words evil being used because it separates them from us. And there is no line of demarcation. And I do agree with Jim. He made some very bad decisions. He had the opportunity to make different ones. Therefore, it puts it completely in his control. We try and put somebody into the monster category because we need to separate them from us. That's what you're seeing on Facebook. You're not seeing clear lines of demarcation, but you're also seeing a very slanted lens. You're seeing only the good stuff. You're not seeing the real stuff that's going on behind the scenes. And we did talk about Facebook was her tool for marketing. It was her job. It's a lifestyle that she's selling, but we know that they were in debt. So she's projecting an image that's not real. And again, the relationship, I think oftentimes we don't see the real relationship. We don't see the power imbalance. We don't see the dynamic shift. In this case, I do see that. And it's very marked and it's very clear there are problems arising. Would anyone imagine that he would kill her and kill the children as the potential solution to the problem? Probably not.
Right.
But he is not a very smart individual. He has repressed emotions, repressed and oppressed emotions. And he has the ability to compartmentalize. And I think that's also very important when we think about behavior. There's lots of people who can compartmentalize things. He's done something absolutely catastrophic. He chose to do that. Post-event, he's behaving perfectly normal. Even on interview, he believes he can talk those. It was Tammy Lee. She's actually a CBI, Colorado Bureau of Investigations agent. And one of our Facebook friends pointed that out to us. So I just wanted to correct that. And it was actually an FBI agent, Jim, Graham Calder, who was in the room, who was pressing around the emotional conversation that he didn't like to talk about. And also just to say, actually, on the polygraph, because we talked about the polygraph and that Tammy Lee did a great job, she actually did her course in 2013. And she was named valedictorian, Jim, by those in Texas, by her class, that she was outstanding in 2013. So I just thought I would share that because that interview was also 7 hours where he was trying to talk his way out of what was going on. So that leads us into the psychopathy checklist. So we said we'd go through it. We said we'd go through an indirect personality assessment based on what we know about.
Right.
So this is where, Lisa, you might be able to furnish us with some more details, having read the 1900 pages of, of the discovery. I've certainly read a lot as well, and I think it would be helpful if we all chime in as we go through and we score him based on what we know, and we're very clear about the things that we don't know about. Okay, so should we start with superficial charm?
Yeah, everybody saw him on the Facebook videos. And I mean, he was a charming guy. He may have been socially awkward, but he was charming. He was sweet. He played with the kids. He was able to apparently charm not only his wife and his kids and their family members, but Nikki, his girlfriend, who he was cheating with. I think his behavior tells us that he was charming. He wasn't someone who was brash or some kind of intense arrogance that would push people away.
What would you say to Chris right now if he were sitting here?
If we were by ourselves?
Yeah.
I would say, Christopher, I need to know what happened that night. I need to know what happened. I've got to get these thoughts out of my head. What I think could have happened, but I need to know. And I think in time he will tell me.
Probably nothing you ever would have imagined you would have faced.
Never. Never. No, and not from the son that I raised and Ronnie raised and our children, you know. We just did everything for them. We worked for them. We wanted them to have a good life, good education. We stressed education. And they were both doing well. I thought, you know, I knew marriages can be bad, but you can get out of them and go on. But I don't know what was going through anybody's mind that night.
Shanann herself said that he has no game, that she never thought that he would cheat on her because he just didn't know how. So I'm just wondering if the charm, like, what's the continuum of charm? I mean, certainly when he was buffed and you know, jacked, he looked a lot more charismatic and charming. But through his life...
Well, we know with Tammy Lee, he did try and charm her, the CBI. I saw it. I heard it for myself.
Yeah.
And I think what's important is what you just said, actually, Lisa. When he met Shanann, I think he was... in quite a different place, 25 years of age, no real girlfriend beforehand, so no game, and very straight down the line. But I see a very different Chris Watts, as you mentioned, having lost the weight, now looking trim, the beach video of him looking buff and wearing his shorts and being seen by people, being seen by women. And actually, Shanann said herself on a Facebook post, my goodness, he's gone from Chris Watts introvert to now talking to strangers. So these are the changes that I'm talking about. I'm not saying that he was the most charming individual like O.J. Simpson, but I do see evidence of superficial charm, certainly in the interviews, when he knows how to use it to manipulate. He may not use it all the time, and he may have learned it late in life. He may have been a late bloomer. And we have to remember, charm is not an innate characteristic. It's learned. And it's learned primarily to manipulate others. So I would probably go with one. I don't see him. He's certainly not somebody like John Meehan or O.J. Simpson.
Right. That's what I was comparing.
Right. Well, that's why. Yeah, that's why this is a scale. So in other words, if he was some kind of brash, arrogant, caustic personality, then I would give him a zero. But he can be charming. And he was able to charm his way into the lives of these women. And I agree with you, Laura, that it should be a one on that. The next is grandiose estimation of self. And as Laura just pointed out, this is not a static part of your life. This can be something that develops over time. And I believe that he was doing all the push-ups and getting ripped and all that because it did increase his self-image and gave him the moxie to do what he did, which was cheat on his wife and kids and then decide to kill them.
Yeah, but again, I keep wondering if we need to do two different psychopathy checklists because there's certainly most of his life.
Right, but I don't think it doesn't work that way because these actions can reveal what was hiding there. It doesn't mean that he is a completely different person. We see what he did and his actions speak much louder. That's why we believe as behavioralists, Laura and I, we believe that indirect personality assessments can be much more accurate than a normal psychological workup because those are all based on self-reporting and testing. And so people can lie and they can manipulate, especially psychopaths.
Right.
So
I mean, wouldn't say that if I didn't think I hadn't heard, you know, read the texts and heard interviews from 25-year-old friends since childhood and, you know.
Right. But again, a lot of psychopathy happens within your own brain and you're the only one that knows that you're actually mimicking other people because you don't know what it is. Have you, Laura, ever heard of somebody doing those kinds of searches? What do you say when somebody says they love you? How do you respond? How do you react? That's exactly what a psychopath does. Exactly. And the smart ones don't have to Google it. They just pick it up from other people.
It tends to be the learned behavior. And I would say he certainly, the empathy, the compassion, there's a void there. But I will share with you some of the notes and cards that he sent to Nikki. And so if we want to talk about superficial charm and wooing someone, one of the cards initially was, wow, where do I even start? The first day I saw you, you took my breath away. The first day I had the guts to talk to you, I got lost in those stunning green eyes. The first day we hung out in the park together, I knew I was addicted. The first time we kissed, I knew I'd met the most amazing, unique and electric woman ever in caps lock. We have a lot of firsts in caps lock together, Nikki, and I want to keep having them with you. And there are many more that he sent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I think we have to understand that behavior is fluid and dynamic and charm is a learned behavior. And the grandiose sense of self-worth, I think that he was starting, I'll call it feeling himself. This feeling himself, because there's nothing more powerful than being loved and loving someone. Well, his sense of love, I think, is quite superficial, but perhaps it's admiration. Perhaps it's being put on a pedestal. But he certainly was bolstered by Shanann at times. I mean, she did write quite a lot of posts. We're so lucky to have you in our lives. You're the most amazing man. You know, he was bolstered a lot by those around him.
And yeah,
Shanann fed his every need. And so you don't see other glimpses within that relationship. And I'd say even childhood friends, you know, did they really know this Chris Watts that within these months period, would they ever have put him down as somebody who would be doing press-ups in his room, taking videos of himself and sending these love notes to Nikki whilst at the same time batting off his wife? We only see what we show people at times. So I think we need to take care. You know, the psychopathy checklist, we're trained in it to give that indirect assessment based on what we see, based on what we understand. And the charm element is very much a learned behavior and it is a manipulator. So, I mean, with the grandiose sense of self-worth, I would probably put him at a one. You know, Tammy Lee, her experience of Chris Watts, she felt that he was trying to charm her and she did play into some of the flirty kind of dynamic. She's trying to get out of him what went on. So she rolled with that. But he kept trying to show pictures of the children. He knew how to try and manipulate. Whether someone is effective at it is another matter, right?
Right.
Well, pathological liar.
Certainly in the situation, he lied a number of times in a number of different layers. And I think at this point, he wasn't a slug who lived in a cave. I don't think he was, as far as I know, he wasn't skydiving stuff, although he did do a bunch of active things with Nikki, right? Didn't they go out and do a lot of...
They went off for a weekend, yeah. And they did the sand on the sand dunes and the sandboarding. And I think this is where he was sort of developing this image of being this action man that he found sexy, and he obviously found sexy in her. Proneness to boredom and stimulation. I actually scored him 0 on that. Him mowing the lawn seemed to be a big event on one of the posts.
Exactly.
So I wasn't convinced about stimulation and proneness to boredom.
But I mean, you know, I was just thinking though with Nikki that he seemed to be, you know, breaking into that, you know, and that's.
But is he just doing what she wants him to do?
I don't know.
It's hard to know, isn't it?
They went to a NASCAR race, right? Which is high.
Yeah, energy, quality. Right?
But that's because as a child, that's how he and his father connected. They would always go to NASCAR races together.
All right, well, then that's a stimulation. Yeah, that's an event that.
He went to the NASCAR Institute of Technology to learn.
Yeah, I would still give him a 1 on it for the need for stimulation because of that. Pathological lying, just what we saw and how many times he was trying different tacks and they were all lies to cover up his actions. It seemed to be fairly easy for him to do. He didn't seem to be panicking when he was doing it. And then the next is cunning and manipulativeness. And we certainly saw it in the interview pre and post polygraph. And of course, when he was faking, being upset about them missing, there was a lot of manipulativeness. So I would score him high on that.
Yeah, but I put 2 for manipulation.
Yeah. Lack of remorse or guilt, I don't even think there's any question. He did not have any. There was never any expressed. Even in the, I loved when the detective said, "Are you okay with the public knowing that Shanann killed these girls?" And he's like, "Yes, because I did not hurt those girls."
Yeah, I gave him 2 on this. I mean, the absence of guilt at any point. And when I say guilt, him feeling guilty, that's what I meant when I was talking about it earlier. I don't see any aspect of him actually feeling guilty about what went on.
All right. Well, we have a lot more to discuss on the psychopathy checklist. This is the really complicated and hard one. And I can't wait to see what Jim and Laura have to say. So for now, this is Real Crime Profile signing out.
If you like deeper analysis like this episode on topics like Making a Murderer, Mindhunter, Escape at Dannemora,
The Case of Sally Challen, The Teacher's Pet, Lynette Dawson, The Exonerated 5 in When They See Us, and The Disappearance of Madeleine McCann, you can listen to RCP on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever platform you listen to us on. And please be sure, if you like what we do, to give us a 5-star review.
Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile. Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203-866-4107. Or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800-2000-247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214-946-4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org. And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.